Welcome back, everybody. This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast, episode 45. I'm Courtney. Hello, as always. With me is Max. Hello, Max.
Hey, Court. Hello, everybody.
And this week, we're talking to a almost lost but not forgotten guest from the past. We're talking with Rob Mark again. Rob, thanks for joining us.
Hey, listen, what do you mean almost lost? Where did I go?
You went to Brazil.
Yeah, I know. Oh, my gosh. In fact, I have to tell you a funny story. I was down there trying to do some JetWine material and some other things on Twitter and all that on my cool iPhone. You should see the bill that I got from AT&T for text services. And I was only there 3 days. It was ungodly.
Roaming, right?
Yeah, well, not roaming for the cell phone part, but roaming for the data plan. Part. It was unbelievable.
It's interesting you say that, Rob, because I just read a story about a guy who downloaded WALL-E on his iPhone for his kid while he was in Mexico, and he got a $62,000 bill.
Okay, well, mine wasn't $62,000, but I could not believe it. I mean, and so far, AT&T has been less than helpful, but that's another story. Anyway, well, welcome. I mean, no, I mean, thank you for inviting me. I shouldn't say welcome. It's your show.
Well, so
I'm sorry I've been gone so long.
Welcome,
glad
Rob.
I got lost in the jungles down there.
And so. I apologize, I didn't really introduce you appropriately, but Rob is the CEO of Comavia and also the author of the JetWine blog.
Yeah, that's me.
It is Sun and Fun Week, and we have some listener voicemails from Sun and Fun. Thank you. David Allen actually sent us a nice voicemail from Sun and Fun. So since we couldn't even be down there, we just had to live vicariously through cell phone and Skype. Rob, you know, we take every chance we can get to name drop. And
I like
we
that.
Have been, we actually have on the website, airplanegeeks.com, we have a guest's on the podcast page, which is a couple of weeks behind. It's a little difficult for me to update, but it has all of our guests that we have talked to. And since you, Rob, I mean, it's been some pretty good stuff. We talked with, if you can believe it, Alfred Kahn.
Oh my gosh. Mr. Deregulation.
That's right. Deregulation.
Mm. Wow.
So that was absolutely fascinating. So a couple housekeeping things before we jump into the news. We do want to mention thanks. We did get some suggestions this week for the Airplane Geeks t-shirts. The thing is, Max and I don't know what to put on the back of them. So if you have any of those suggestions, keep them coming. They were we'll read them later on in the show, but they were pretty good, so you got your work cut out for you. Remember, if we pick yours, then we'll make sure you get a t-shirt. Also, I wanted to point out, and if you've been following me on Twitter, as Miller22, you'll know that I've been working on another side project with podcasting called Quote.me. And what we're doing with that is we're creating the ability to take bits and pieces of podcasts up to 5 minutes and allow people to share them and to quickly find. So if you find something interesting, you can create a little snippet or a quote of a podcast and share that with people. It's at quote, quote.me/beta, because it's still in beta. And the reason I mentioned it this week is because I want to start using this for the Airplane Geeks podcast. And it's a great way for listeners to support us as well, because you can go in and extract the different parts of the podcast that you think were interesting instead of just mentioning to people that you heard this on the Airplane Geeks podcast and they have to listen to us ramble on for 60 minutes before they hear what they were looking for. So if you find something or you hear something on this podcast that you think is worthwhile to share, jot down the time that you heard it, and then go to quote.me/beta and create your own quote. And we're going to start using that. And I think it's a great way for other podcasters as well to kind of get their listeners up for people who wouldn't normally download the entire podcast. Okay, self plug, shameless plug is over.
I think that's a pretty cool idea.
I think so too. And you know why I think so, Rob? Because it was my idea.
Oh, right. Yeah, I was just going to say, I'll bet it was because it was your idea. I'd be very curious to – and you said it's quote K-W-O-T-E?
Dot me.
Dot beta.
That's actually slash beta. it's a great way for podcasters to kind of get their wares out there without people investing the download time as well as listening time. So I'm very interested to hear the feedback from our listeners, the Airplane Geeks out there are kind of being our test case for this, as well as some of the other podcasters, what your thoughts are on this and how we might make it better. So we do appreciate that and really excited about what we can do for new media, at least on that side, since we have done a bit about that. Okay. News. Okay, first up, our news item, our first news item this week comes from Yahoo News. This actually came from Steve Vischer in Australia. Toy plane in close call with 737 jet. A man's facing investigation after a remote-controlled airplane came close to colliding with a passenger jet over Perth Airport. Video taken from a camera thought to be attached to the model plane shows how near it came to the real aircraft. The event was initially posted on YouTube, brilliant, but has since been removed. Enthusiasts are thought to be furious over the stunt. So not only do we have people at Domino's, working at Domino's Pizza, making stupid YouTube videos, but now it seems like we have somebody who's flying a toy plane at a real aircraft.
The video's kind of interesting, you know?
And as Rob mentioned, and you make a very good point, Rob, it doesn't look just quite right. However, at the end of the article, Virgin Blue did say that they were, quote, aware of an alleged incident. So I don't know if that means that the pilots noticed it or if
they read the story. I wonder why it was taken down from YouTube.
I'm sorry. I know that I'm the born cynic or skeptic or whatever, but when I saw that video, I swear that 737 looked like the one that I play with in Flight Sim. It really did. And maybe I'm just completely out to lunch, but of course, listen to the statement that the airline gave, that they're aware of the incident. That doesn't really mean, I'm sorry, I'm a public relations guy. I know how to, what do we call it? Spin it?
Spin.
Yeah, I mean, so you kind of admit that maybe you knew about it when you're looking at everybody else saying, what in the Sam Hill is this about? And everybody says, I don't know.
You can't admit that you didn't know. Is that?
That's right. That would be worse than anything, other than maybe the thing hitting the airplane. But I still just something just didn't look right to me either. So, but, you know, we'll find out one of these days. It was cool music, though. I thought the guy did some neat editing.
Yeah. If it's real, it's really not a good idea.
No, it's not.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I can't imagine one of those things that, I forgot, looked like a little World War II fighter plane that he was flying. At least that's what it looked like. It was broken up on the ground, but I don't know. I'm just not sure. No, but that's a silly, stupid thing to be doing, is to try to be flying little pretend airplanes around big airplanes, which certainly is part of the story on your UAV story this week as well.
Speaking of things almost hitting airplanes.
Right.
Which moves into our next story. Speaking of small things hitting airplanes, this from NPR, actually. FAA says aircraft wildlife strikes pose growing threat. The annual number of collisions between aircraft and wildlife quadrupled from 1990 to 2007 and poses a growing threat to aviation, according to a Federal Aviation Administration report released online Friday. Here's some interesting statistics. Birds were involved in 97.5% of the reported strikes. I'm surprised it's low, that low. In fact, my first thought was, if that's only 97.5%, then what's in the other 2.5%, you may ask? Well, bats, which are not considered birds in this report, only represent 0.3%. Terrestrial mammals were involved in 2.1%, and I suppose that's on the ground.
I hope so.
I was going to say, because if it's mammals. Not, I want to hear how that one ends.
Well, one we know of is the, I guess it's not technically terrestrial and not a mammal, but the salmon that hit the 737 for Alaska Airlines.
That's right. That's right.
That may count. And reptiles represent 0.1% according to the data. Despite the staggering increase in incidents, the FAA estimates that only about 20% of aircraft wildlife strikes are reported because of differences in voluntary reporting procedures. And they really kind of touched with that paragraph right there. They only touched on what I think is the real issue here. And that is they make this big, bold statement that wildlife strikes have quadrupled from 1990 to 2007. And how much has air travel grown in that time? It's probably doubled.
And let's not forget that they weren't going to tell us about all this data anyway until just last week.
And that's the part of the story that's not even mentioned. And that is a big deal.
That is. And you know, there's a some interesting information on that, some insight into that on the Fastlane blog. It's at fastlane.dot.gov. This is the blog of the U.S. Secretary of Transportation. And in that blog, he explains just what caused them to, change their decision and go ahead and release this. And it's really fascinating. And let me just quote a little bit of it. It says, you may have heard previous reports that the FAA had planned to withhold public release of airplane-bird collision information. Well, that just isn't consistent with the direction President Obama wants to take this administration. It doesn't fit our policies thus far, and it doesn't fit the way we see our mission. He goes on to say, when he was in Congress, he sat on the House Intelligence Committee for 8 years. When I saw that the administration had released the memos on torture, I thought, never in my life did I dream this sort of information would be released. But if CIA information like that can see the light of day, there is a new paradigm, and making bird strike reports available should certainly be part of that new paradigm. Fascinating, I think. Our government in action.
Now, let's consider why they would have hidden that. I think, to me, it's quite obvious that they did not think the American public could find the truth in these reports. And I think this news article kind of supports that theory in that it looks bad. But the FAA is looking at this saying, well, come on, we've got so many more airplanes. Our reporting procedures actually just started picking up in the late 90s. Before that, it was, do we hit a bird? I don't know. Does it smell like fried chicken? No. Well, then we didn't. I mean, it's so nothing different is happening here. You know, there's not more birds. There's more airplanes. Now, maybe there's more birds, but they're not a vendetta. They're not on a vendetta.
They're not after us.
Except for those crazy Canadian geese.
Yeah. Well.
But, you know, but on the other hand, Max, and I think exactly what you're getting at, it was a bad decision. Why hide information? It just makes it look like they're so much worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the press is drawing conclusions. You see charts where you see that Denver has the most most wildlife strikes and so forth. But you know, based on all those factors that you just described, it's way too early to draw any kind of conclusions or say anything definitive about the data. The good news is that the data is out there now for inspection and for analysis by people who are qualified to do that, and that hasn't happened yet. We're still waiting. We'll have to wait for that to come.
You mean trying to find the qualified people?
Yeah, well, there's always people that can spin the numbers. But.
Okay. If this hadn't happened within just a couple of months of that U.S. air crash, I mean, who knows how this would have been taken? Maybe right. It would have slipped under people's radar. But I don't know.
No, I think you hit it right on the head, Rob. They were worried about scaring the public. And really, let's face it, that's what the FAA's job is. Not to scare the public, but the FAA's job is to ease public concerns. That's why the FAA started. That's why the airlines wanted the FAA around, because they wanted the public to feel safe. And the FAA probably went a little bit too far in that, maybe a little too conservative, especially with everything else going on and trying to hide the information. But here it is. They're hitting animals. No big surprise as far as I'm concerned, to be quite honest with you.
Right. No, it's and it's very much your point is well taken about them trying to make sure they didn't scare us, and the FAA is there for that reason. I mean, it's crazy. It's like the TSA. I mean, nobody really knows for certain. Are we better off? Oh, in a lot of ways, certainly. I mean, when you look at all the junk that the TSA people confiscate from people's carry-on luggage, I mean, there's no way that you could say we're not better off. But overall, is that worth $40 or $50 billion? Well, okay, that's a tougher, yeah, that's a tougher call.
Maybe they should be screening birds.
Yeah. Yes. Well, that's an interesting point. Of course, I haven't really met too many birds in my life. Of course, I hit a few when I was flying still, but I mean, luckily they were always down low, never up high. But
well, unfortunately, the problem with the birds in the aircraft is there's actually no pilot guiding the birds. But in our next story,
have a next story coming up? What's that about?
It's about another type of unmanned aviation device. That's right. Our segues are getting a little forced around here, but they're still segues. This from the Associated Press. Air collision fears slow expansion of U.S. drone use. FAA officials made it clear in a recent closed government conference that until the pilotless aircraft gain the high-tech ability to sense and avoid commercial aircraft and other airborne objects, the government is unlikely to allow them to operate much more freely in congested airspace. They gave a great example of a situation in which this affected the Air Force, and that was during the California wildfires last summer. The Air Force, Navy, and NASA each offered to launch unmanned systems to track the flames, identify hotspots, and determine where the fires were likely to move. But due to FAA guidelines, only a single drone could fly in the region at a time. The military argued that the Ikahana, which is their which is NASA's version of the Predator, they said it could be flown at the same time as one of the Navy's or Air Force's high-altitude Global Hawks because the aircraft would be as much as 40,000 feet apart in altitude. The additional drone, officials said, would provide broader, more comprehensive coverage of disaster. In the end, Global Hawks operated by the Navy and Air Force were flown at separate times from the NASA drone.
I'm a little confused by something here, and maybe you guys can help out. I mean, it seems like the FAA is saying that the UAVs, the drones, need to be self-aware of their situation.
So do teenagers, actually.
And you know how well that works, but
yeah, exactly.
but you know, it sounds like they're looking for some kind of, you know, automated ability in the drone, but. Why do we need that? I mean, isn't that what ATC does? I mean, why is this unmanned aircraft in the sky different from the, you know, the collection of other aircraft?
Give you my opinion. I think that's because these airplanes are being operated from different locations. And there's no central authority that can say, hey, Max, where's your bird right now? Well, I'm at 4,500 feet over this. Okay, I'm going to stay at 5,500, and I'll be over in this place. And they go, okay, all right. And you don't worry about hitting each other.
Well,
but they're not
sense.
Talking. None of these people are talking to each other. So that's like air traffic control from, you know, the airplane standpoint. And I don't think the technology's there yet. I know TCAS will tell you there's another vehicle there that is transponder equipped. But I agree with Max. It sounds like they're saying we want these drones to not only know each other are there, but to be able to see and avoid the other ones. And I don't think the technology's there yet. But I guess the bigger threat, and honestly, because you would think, well, who cares if they run together? Except that if they're over a populated area, you don't want
right,
these
sure.
are not, you know, these are not model airplanes. You know, if you look at some of these air,
yeah,
these are
big
machines. These things are the size of Cessna 150, 172 even. These are big machines with a lot of fuel on them. So that it is a threat.
You know, not to mention they take up a big chunk of airspace because of that, right? I'm sure they just say block off, I don't know, maybe 10,000 feet or whatever, just because they were afraid of them. But commercial traffic has to fly around them. I mean, it's essentially a military maneuvering area. But Rob, I'm still not convinced. I'm still as skeptical as Max, because if they have real-time piloting, then they're should be able to have real-time ATC with wherever and have the ATC as the coordinator, if you will.
Right.
You would think so. Well, think so, and I have never. I mean, this is not rocket science to me either. So that means that they're either. That means they're doing something else that is, because this is just not that hard. It really isn't. However, I mean, I would not want civilian airplanes in the area where these drones are operating. I mean, you want to run two drones together, that's one thing. But I don't want to see somebody in a, you know, in an airliner or a business airplane out there close by where these drones are being run. Especially when you, right now, people flying the drones are, I believe, certified pilots. But I mean, they're working on a way that they don't need people to be licensed pilots in order to do this. And that's going to be a whole nother issue, I think.
Right. And I mean, let's face it. I mean, we're kind of getting on a theme here, and that's the FAA is around to make air travelers feel safer. And I could see where, yeah, they're concerned about unmanned drones flying out there. But if there's a 0.001% chance that there's going to be a collision, that's only like 2 days worth, and then there's an airplane crash. So for the FAA to be ultra conservative like this is not out of the question. Simply because of the amount of air traffic and just the statistics, the odds are against them, and it's kind of their job. So even though I like to say I'm skeptical, you know, why can't they do this? On the other hand, look, taking it extremely slow, while it's slow and some progress may suffer, the first time you go too quickly, that's the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm certainly not in any, by any stretch of the imagination, I'm not in favor of seeing these things mixed into civil airspace. I think that would be a huge mistake right now. You want to take a block of airspace where it is a disaster area or something like that. That's another story, but they're, I don't believe that's what, you know, they're not even at that point yet.
Yeah, agreed. Keeping in with our amazing segues.
Oh, yeah, I knew there was one coming up here.
Speaking of UAVs, this one from Wired, which is quickly becoming the source for some of our better, or shall we say, cooler aviation news. The Wired articles is Tiny Weapons, Jet Engines, and Killer Drone Upgrades. Researchers at the Naval Air Warfare Center at China Lake, California, are expected in the next month to test out a 5-pound missile designed for use with unmanned aircraft. The 2-foot-long Spike is about a quarter of the size of the next smallest on the planet, says Steve Felix. He's the missile project's manager. There are also some other upgrades that they are making to the Predator itself. In fact, they developed the Avenger, or Predator C. It's a major upgrade from the earlier versions, with a 41-foot-long fuselage and 66-foot wingspan. The Avenger is capable of staying in the air for up to 20 hours and operating at up to 60,000 feet. Can fly over 400 knots, which is 50% faster than the turboprop-powered Reaper, and more than 3 times as quick as the Predator.
Right. And why do you think those things, why do you think they want them? Because they can fly for 20 hours.
Right.
You don't have to feed them, and you don't have to give them bathroom breaks. What a great idea.
Right. Absolutely. And they can loiter in dangerous areas, and they can send Spike in if they have a problem. Which, this Spike missile, by the way, the article says is about the size of a loaf of French bread.
And then there was a really amusing comment at the end of the article from someone, from Mike, who says that a loaf of French bread is called a baguette. And he can't wait for some general to say someday, launch the baguette.
I love that. Love that.
Clever.
You know, we were speaking with Richard Abalafia a couple of weeks ago, just to name drop again. But we were kind of talking about UAVs as they related to the Air Force's future, and specifically to the F-22 and F-35 program and where the funds are being appropriated. It seems like this is the other half of the story we were talking about, Max.
Yes.
You know, they're putting it into these smaller missiles that sound more like a sniper missile to take out one or two people rather than, say, a large vehicle. And into the upgrade of the UAVs themselves.
Yeah, I think this is, it's kind of clear where the trend is on this, and what we're going to see in the future for the Air Force strategy for air superiority. Clearly, drones and UAVs and remote operation has got a major role to play.
I was talking to a professor out at University of Kansas in Salina last week, and they have a program out there to teach people how to fly drones, and they're opening up a school. And this is somebody you guys might want to talk to. You might find that interesting for your show, but they're opening up a whole new program of how to teach people how to fly these drones, and they are absolutely convinced that while it's not going to happen this year, that the days of the purely, completely pilotless aircraft are definitely in our future for all applications. Boy, I'll tell you, I'm probably sounding like my father, but I can't imagine that. Would you fly on a 777 with nobody up front except a Windows PC?
It's the famous joke, welcome to the first fully automated flight, sit back, relax, nothing can go wrong. Look, it's not about technology. It's about people's willingness to put their lives on the line, even though in most instances it would probably be safer. But that's a stretch coming from a pilot who doesn't want to see other pilots lose their jobs as a pilot. But it's all about perception. People want to feel safe, and they're not going to in a remote control airplane. We don't have remote control cars.
But wait till the day comes that one of the airlines says, and by the way, if you want the cheap fares, take our new pilotless airplane, and the fares are really, really cheap. When it comes down to saving a buck, I'll bet you they'll find people that will do it.
But you know what? I think you're on to something. Our next story is my favorite this week. It's actually from ZDNet, and they're a technology blog, and you'll soon find out why. This is written by Larry Dignan. The article is, Mr. Airline CEO, Meet Telepresence, or Else. It says, what business are you in, airlines? Flights or meetings? Just as newspapers thought they were in the business of gathering news and printing newspapers, the music industry CEOs thought they were in the business of vinyl records, tapes, or CDs. Many airlines appear to think they are in the business of ensuring flights are running on time, tickets are sold, and customers pay for extra baggage. I think they are wrong. He says, telepresence is what the airlines should be looking at. Here's the things he would do if he were the CEO of Mythical Air. Embrace telepresence as another mechanism for people to meet and declare that we would help customers with this. Number two, create Mythical Air telepresence lounges in major cities and smaller towns. Three, Mythical Air lounges in airports will also include telepresence. While this may threaten our flights businesses, but in reality, our customers will be happy. He also says he'd tie up major hotel chains to partner and run Mythical lounges inside hotels. And he would work with Expedia Orbitz and others to list Mythical telepresence among the flight options in results. So when a customer types in Sacramento to London, the results might include a flight from Sacramento to San Francisco and then a, quote, telepresence flight from San Francisco to London and offer a hotel in San Francisco. Did I mention this guy writes for a technology blog, not an airline blog?
You mean because of the fact that I can't quite figure out what the point is? I think I'm understanding what he's talking about, but I wish he had defined telepresence. I
think it's the video conferencing. He actually talks about a tool, Cisco's telepresence tool, But we've been doing something. We missed this last week, but I want to bring back, Max, the Richard Abulafia quote of the week. And what it is, Rob, is just the funniest aviation-related quote that we found during the week, and it's usually Rob. Or, excuse me, it's usually
Richard.
Richard. This one actually comes from IT Guy Z. He's in the comments of the ZDNet. He says, Larry, let me give you a little advice. Stick to writing about the tech industry.
Well, you know, there is a point here, I think, that's important. You know, a lot of companies, when they think about marketing, they think about their future. They look at what their customers do and not what they are trying to accomplish, what their customers are trying to achieve. And that's kind of where this article is going. You know, what customers do is, to the airlines, is they fly to someplace else. But that's not the reason for their travel, right? I think the point of the article is the reason for the travel is because they're going to business meetings. They're going to meet with clients. They're going to meet with customers or potential customers. And if the airlines don't, you know, kind of view it in this way, and the technology changes such that it's easier or more convenient or cheaper, especially for companies to communicate with their you know, with their customers or with their other, you know, branch offices electronically, then the airlines stand to, you know, lose out. They stand to, you know, miss the boat while their customers go off in another direction.
Speaking of missing the boat.
Yeah.
This guy, I completely understand, Max, the idea of, look, you need to create your competition before they do,
right?
Or before it creates itself. And okay, telepresence, these video conferencing and all that, yeah, it's eaten into airline travel a little bit on the business end. But here's the thing, it's nothing new.
No, it's absolutely not.
Around this argument, as soon as Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone, the Wright brothers should have given up.
Well, yeah,
because it's different. It isn't. He references the railroads and how the railroads weren't able to keep up with the airlines. But look, people don't travel to do something they could have sat in front of a television to do. You know, some do. Look, there's a lot to be said about meeting face-to-face with a client. There's a lot to be said about meeting face-to-face with family members. You can't video presence a vacation, so that's always going to be around. This is not why people fly. They do not fly for what they can teleconference for, because we're doing that for free right now. It's
hence his comment about stick to writing about technology.
Right. There's nothing new here that threatens the airlines. But to say, if you want to go from Sacramento to London, we'll fly to San Francisco where you can sit on a video conference call, that's just silly.
Yeah, that's a little crazy.
Except that, you know what they'll do? They'll still figure out a way to collect the same fare as they would have gotten if they'd flown you all the way to London.
Yeah, so, there you go.
And they'll sell you sodas.
And they'll make you like it.
Yeah. They'll charge you per briefcase that you bring in. It's like a video conference checked bag fee.
Yeah, but seriously, the one point that this man made at the start of his article I thought was good, in the sense that the airlines do not completely understand what they're selling. They're not selling air transportation.
Yeah,
they're selling solutions to travel problems, or, you know, whatever.
Right,
and
right.
I mean, because if they thought they were, you know, they don't honestly, let's be serious. We've talked about this many times, and our friendly guys here at United in Chicago, I mean, I've never seen an airline in my life that seems to be able to be so successful at making so many people so angry, employees and customers, and they're still in business. How do they do that? I don't know.
But, you know, it's ironic you bring up United, because United was the single major attempt at bundling everything, bringing the entire travel experience under one umbrella. It's horrible that I can't remember the name of it.
Allegis? I think it was Allegis or something like that.
And it didn't really work. I mean, we're seeing some of that today, you know, looking at the entire travel experience, but you know, maybe with Allegiant and doing the travel company portion of it, but they don't own the hotels. They're not owning the rental car agencies. And that's kind of the bundled experience, I guess, is what he's getting at. As soon as I read that line, Rob, I said, that sounds great, but you can only control what you can control.
That's right.
And if you're offering a service, then you need to control your service, not making your competition better by flying somebody somewhere to have a teleconference with somebody else. That makes no sense to me.
Well, and let's face it, the word service or customer service in the airline industry is kind of an oxymoron for the main, except for a few that seem to be doing a nice job, but not many.
Our next story comes from ATW. Alaska Narrows first quarter loss introduces unique checked bag fee. Alaska Airlines and Horizon Air parent Alaska Air Group lost $19.2 million in the first quarter, narrowed from a 37.3 deficit in the year-ago period, and announced a $15 charge for the first bag. Sounds pretty standard, right? Not quite. That fee comes with a twist. And it's a good twist, I might add. It includes a guarantee to compensate passengers with either 2,500 loyalty program miles or $25 off a future flight if their bag is not at the claim within 25 minutes after the aircraft reaches the gate.
Brilliant. Yeah,
so
will there be a timer
at the luggage pickup that says, you know, it starts clicking off when
countdown.
The aircraft is landed? I don't know. I'm just wondering how they're going to enforce that.
Here's what the airline is thinking, because I'm sure somebody mentioned that. And here's what I would assume the answer is. We don't care if everybody comes to us and wants $25 off their next flight. That's another flight.
That's right.
And this is a way for them to say, look, we're charging you a fee, but we're going to give you something. You know, we're putting it on ourselves to give you better service with this fee, even if nothing changes. This is how you're supposed to do it.
Right.
Take note, United Airlines.
This almost makes you, you know, want to pay the fee just on the chance that you can, you know, get something out of it.
Right. There are people that will do it. $15 and I can get 25 off my next flight. Fantastic. And they'll stand there with a stopwatch. And if those bags come down at 5 minutes, the airline will probably say, you know what? Okay. But they know that not everybody's going to stand in line longer than what their bags took to get it. Besides, $25 off the next flight is free to Alaska for almost all intents and purposes. This is brilliant. This is one of the greatest PR moves that we've seen in a very long time.
It's certainly an indication of some creative thinking.
It is. And it's an indication. Well, I mean, let's look at the other half of this story, and that's the first quarter loss is actually down from last year. Alaska is very, very highly looked at by a lot of the analysts in the industry, and rightly so. And I think this is a fantastic move by Alaska. And ironically, or maybe we did this on purpose, who knows, but this comes after last week's story about how United screwed up a PR move.
Which PR move did they screw up?
Charging extra for overweight people who need to.
Oh, right. Yes. That one. I don't know. They have so many, I can't keep them all.
Yeah, so somehow United's the last one to the party on that, and they take all the blame. Here, Alaska is the last one to the party on the $15 check bag, bless Southwest Airlines, and they're lauded for what, and rightly so. And maybe the segue should have been, speaking of dumb things United Airlines does.
Yeah, you know, that is an interesting point. I guess I hadn't thought about it that way. Maybe that is an interesting PR move. But I guess I'd be curious to know how much they think they're going to collect at $15 a bag, because doesn't this force more people that are trying to save a buck to carry their bags on board and try to jam them in the overheads?
Yeah, it does, and it ruins the customer experience. I can tell you from firsthand of trying to find overhead bin space on a 3-3 aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
And really, a lot of the savings is actually coming from the less checked bags they have to handle.
Hmm. Yeah, that might be a good point.
So I don't know what that is or what they expect that to be, but I know a lot of the airlines who have put this into place up to a year ago are saying in their results how much the checked bag fees have helped them in their bottom line. I don't think the other airlines can hold out much longer. Alaska was, I think, the only other one besides United. I may be wrong on that. Or, excuse me, Southwest
doesn't.
Wow. Yeah. That's the opposite end of the spectrum. But I am very impressed by the move that Alaska made on this.
It certainly seems like a better use of management resources to think of creative things like this than it does this, waste time thinking of ways you can, screw up Virgin America.
Well, it is interesting, though, when you think, too, that if Southwest has to go to this, which who knows? I mean, I wonder how clever they will be at announcing. I mean, my guess is they'll be more clever than this. Although I have to admit, this is interesting.
Southwest has the track record of cleverness. You're absolutely right.
Yes.
So we'll see. Although they've kind of backed themselves into a corner by saying that they won't, it'd be tough for them to add it later on. But you're right. That it'll be interesting to see exactly how they would handle that.
Well, I was on the call last week when Gary Kelly was doing the earnings call from Southwest, and he made a very interesting point about the check bag. And he said, would we like the extra money? Oh, sure. Come on, who wouldn't? He said, but honestly, getting people to stand in line for whatever they need at Southwest and then start pulling out their credit card for additional funding, at the gate, he said, or at the counter, he said, I just don't see it. Except that I thought about it later, and I said, well, wait a minute. When I check in at Southwest, I always pull out a credit card anyway to slide it into the machine to get it to recognize me. So
right.
I guess it's not really that big a deal, but I guess I hope they don't really do it, though. But that's just me.
Well, moving into our next story, no really good segue for this one. This comes from BBC. EasyJet to sue over snow losses.
They're suing God, are they? Or
yeah.
I mean, where do you send that? How do you serve him?
And God's response was,
yeah. Exactly.
Budget airline EasyJet is planning to sue Luton Airport and Luton Borough Council for £1 million over disruption caused by the recent snow. EasyJet says it lost money through the airport closure and canceled flights. The airline claims the cancel failed in its duty to keep the roads open around the airport, meaning cabin crews were not able to get to work. EasyJet is seeking £500,000 from each, the airport and the council. This is obviously coming from an airline that doesn't deal with snow very often.
No. Well, they don't deal with snow very often in the southern part of England anyway. I mean, I lived there for a number of years, and the few times that we had snow, it was a vacation for those of us that had come from the States that knew snow. But to the Brits who didn't, who were maniacs on the road anyway, I mean, the number of accidents was just up phenomenally. They don't know what to do with snow. So, I mean, they're not like a big city that here in the States that there's tons of snow equipment sitting by at the ready. I don't know. Maybe they sent the people out there with brooms or something. I don't know. I think this is also an indication that the airline is feeling awkwardly responsible for a whole lot of angry people, and they'd like to point the finger at somebody other than themselves. This certainly distracts people from that problem. I mean, it is, let's face it, in that part of the country, it is difficult to plan snow, but you have to know that it's going to happen sometimes. But of course, from what I heard, I think they had 8 or 10 inches of snow in London, which is just mind-boggling for them. I mean, the whole city came to a grinding halt. I mean, Heathrow was shut down for, 2 days, I think, or a day and a half. I mean, but you don't see British Airways suing, the airport authority in London to get that. It's just, it's an act of God. It's a cost of doing business. stuff happens.
Yeah, get over it.
Yeah, I mean, really.
Rob, you win this one. You're absolutely right. It's a way to point fingers without actually... A million pounds of them is nothing. They want to be able to point the finger at somebody else. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting to find out if this goes anywhere. My guess is with you, Court, I think they'll fail miserably on this.
That's it for the news. However, we do want to jump in real quickly to the pick of the week, kind of do it out of order a little bit, because it, as we had kind of alluded to before, it sparked some interesting discussion. So, Max, go ahead with your pick of the week.
Yeah, sure. My pick is a new AirTran campaign that's at everyflight.com. The basic concept is very simple. What AirTran would like people to do is just tell them what's the one thing that you want on every flight. And it could be anything. It could be something that you'd seriously like to see, or just something whimsical. If you look at the entries, you see things like trivia contests, bunny slippers. Someone wanted windmills for reasons not altogether clear to me. Someone else thought air fresheners would be a good idea. It's just a wide variety of things that are ranging from, yeah, that's a good idea, to that's kind of silly. So the point of the promotion is that they're looking to sort of engage their customers and learn something from them. The vice president of marketing and sales, it's Tad Hutchinson, said, "We like to know what our passengers want, whether it's jacuzzis, foosball tables, or live music. We want to hear from you. We encourage all of our customers to keep those creative suggestions coming until the big reveal in May." The big reveal in May is May 12th. And what you can do is visit everyflight.com, and besides submitting your own suggestions, you can vote on the suggestions submitted by others, and you have a chance to win a seat on every flight. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but there's some prize there. And they have some other aspects of the promotion. There's some videos and some other interesting things. You can go and look at the suggestions made by U.S. state. Many states seem to, Wi-Fi seems to float up pretty high on the list for most states, except when I checked California, it seems like Californians want to see celebrities on every flight. So, go figure. So it's an interesting
concept. Did anybody put cheerleaders in there or anything like that?
No, well, close. Somebody put in hula dancers. And when I went in there, you can see the votes, and there were 24 negative votes for hula dancer and 0 positive votes for hula dancer. That's when I went in. By the time I left, they had 1 positive vote for hula dancer.
That's interesting. Yeah. Wow.
They have a nice little charts and graphs section where you can find results by the state. I picked Georgia, seeing as that's where the majority of AirTran's traffic transits and probably begins and ends the trip through Atlanta. They have things such as candy store, Wi-Fi seems to be finding its way. They have Wi-Fi at 28%, actually comes up twice. Massages at 10%, and Ashley Tisdale at 10%. And other at 42%.
Kentucky's kind of interesting. Kentucky's, starts the usual Wi-Fi is at the top of the list, but TV is another big one for Kentucky. And get this, dogs, 8% vote for dogs. But this is an example of something really creative that AirTran is doing to try to engage their customers, and some aspects of it are kind of whimsical. In other regards, they're just maybe just trying to, sort of generate discussion and buzz. But at the same time, amongst all the, kind of goofy suggestions and things, there's some, there's some good suggestions, some good information that they can get from their customers. And, this is it reflects favorably on AirTran.
Moving into some listener feedback, we're actually going to go with a couple voicemails. That's right. We got some voicemails this week. One we did get, as we mentioned, a reply from David Allen on the goings-on at Sun and Fun, since Max and I were not able, or nor Rob, were able to get down to Sun and Fun this week, unfortunately. But Dave did send us this message that we'll listen to now.
This is David Allen from the Pilot's Flight Podlog here at Sun and Fun, calling gorgeous weather and sitting down having a line of Kugel's Berry Wife with Linda Mace of the Girls with Wings organization. And you know what? The weather's great. The people are great. The flying is great. We're in the middle of the air show right now, and you know what? The weather is here, and we wish you were beautiful. Come on down.
Sounds like David was having a lot of fun. And Max, you mentioned that they did record a Pilot's Flight Podlog podcast while they were down there, and that it's one to check out.
Yeah, it's a really great podcast. It's the again, it's the Pilot's Flight Podlog. You can just Google that. Episode 44 is from Sun and Fun. They had Linda Meeks on, who's the founder of Girls with Wings. It's a great podcast. It's long, but it's a really, really interesting listen. Kudos to Will and Dave for that podcast. There's some others as well. Uncontrolled Airspace recorded at the beginning of Sun and Fun, and I think another one at the end. I think we have one coming from Airspeed as well. I don't think that's out as we record this, but you know, you can look for those as well. And it's a great way to kind of get a feel for what these events are like. But you know, sort of the warning is: listen to this stuff, and you'll probably want to go next year.
I think he had too many beers down there myself, but I guess that's part of the
fun. I think
fun.
They all did.
Yeah,
too many lineys.
You caught the end. He said the weather is here and we wish we were beautiful.
This is Jeremy from Los Alamos, Mexico. Just want to say, you guys have the best podcast in the world. Bye-bye.
See,
no, I like
very,
that one.
Very simple. That's my favorite voicemail of all time. So, Jeremy, you win the award this week of our respect. Very simple, to the point that we are the greatest. How can you go wrong with that?
Yeah.
Jeremy, again, thank you so much for the email, or excuse me, for the voicemail. Moving into email, rather, we do have a couple of very interesting emails that we got throughout the week. The first comes from Mark from Luton Airport. He says he's been listening to the podcast here in the UK since episode 25 and reckon that airlines who want to charge silly fees are missing a trick. He says they already have logos on aircraft. Even Ryanair have had Jaguar cars. It's a color scheme in the past. Why don't airlines get their flights sponsored? Welcome to your ABC Airlines flight sponsored by. Every announcement could be sponsored, as there would be up to 500 people in an A380 unable to switch your ad message off. All I can say is brilliant. Get this guy in PR. Get this guy in marketing somewhere.
Yeah, there's nothing like a captive audience. Take advantage of it.
If there was one way he could possibly one-up his idea, it's by this. He gives a perfect example by saying, this is your safety announcement, courtesy of the Airplane Geeks podcast. Check us at airplanegeeks.com. What do you think, he asks.
Brilliant.
Again, brilliant. He also goes on to ask what happened to our word associations. And the answer is that we're kind of talking with the same guests over and over, and it's not as fun when we don't get to trick them into it. We don't really tend to do it for people we've had on the podcast before because, well, they're expecting it, and it takes the fun out of it. Got another email from Craig. Says, love the podcast. Just started listening this week. He lives in Kansas City, home of the Airline History Museum, which has just acquired an L-1011, which I believe
wow.
is just about solely relegated to history these days. A great aircraft. He says it will be ferried to the Kansas City downtown airport this Sunday, which is the day of recording. And that will be the first time an L-1011 has landed at this airport. He gives a couple links to the museum that you can find at airlinehistorymuseum.com. Should be easy enough, huh?
Cool, yeah.
And then he ends with, keep up the great work.
Well, as long as you've got this listener in England, can I just make one point? It's not Luton, it's Luton.
Oh, it's Luton. Oh, apologies.
Airport. Yeah, I mean, and this guy will, if he's listening, he's going to go, yeah, they love it.
So, well, thank you.
That's okay.
Max, maybe that's why we don't have anybody in Europe.
They can't understand our English.
Yeah. We did get another email from Stephen Tornbloom this week. He just thought maybe this week you guys could discuss the first quarter results among the airlines. We didn't necessarily in the main topic, or excuse me, in the news items, Stephen, because you sent me the email and so nicely grouped them all together. That I wanted to use your email as a mention for it. To be honest, the reason we don't is because it does take quite a bit of research, and time is really at a premium for us, seeing as this isn't really our day job, even though I don't have one. but this, Stephen, you give us the perfect opportunity to kind of go through a summary of the results, and we appreciate you lining them up for us. He does have 8 results here for us. United posts a $382 million quarterly loss as business traffic plunged 30%. Delta posted a $794 million loss. And ground several freighters. There were a lot of special items in with that as well. So that 794 was due to a lot of writing off some of the merger costs. AirTran reported a first quarter profit. Falling traffic and fares dragged Continental to $136 million loss. Alaska Air Group narrowed their first quarter loss, which we talked about earlier. U.S. Airways also narrowed its first quarter loss. I don't have the numbers. I apologize. JetBlue did make a small profit, and American Airlines lost $375 million in first quarter. So I apologize that that's kind of skimming over it, but we do apologize, or we do appreciate the chance, rather, to talk about it with your email. So thank you, Stephen. In fact, most of our quarterly results are from now on are just going to say the airlines lost money. We got an email from Grant. He's over in Australia. It says, regarding our United story last week, having the overweight people buy an extra seat, says he has 4 words for these people. Lose weight, fat, and then rear. he says, you know, was it not politically correct? Well, maybe it needs to be said. And this is a common argument that people are making. This is at least moderately controllable, more so than maybe, you know, some of the disabilities, some of the other disabilities, I should say. And it is an argument that, a lot of the people have been bringing forward, in support of these extra fees.
It's a tough position to, promote publicly. And, you know, I don't know, the way I look at it is, you know, there's people that weigh a lot more than I do. There's people that weigh a lot less than I do. There's people that are certainly a lot stupider than I am. There's a couple of people who are smarter than I am, my wife primarily. But, you know, we're all different, and I'm just sort of over it. And, you know, we're just not all going to be the same. Sometimes differences from others affect us, and I just try to roll with it and, you know, not let it get to me too much.
Do you think they'll be charging less for people that are very thin?
Well, that's the other valid concept.
Sure, make really skinny seats.
I think what people are kind of confusing this with is they think overweight people weigh more, so they're now charging by weight. That's not it at all. They're taking up more space. It's entirely, there's a finite number of seats available on that aircraft. An airline sells seats. You could fit into a seat and weigh 700 pounds. There's a negligible fuel difference. Okay, that all aside, the airline wants to sell the space in your seat. And if you take up more space than that, unless you could fit 2 skinny people in one seat.
That's like the people that carry their kids on their lap.
Well, moving into the last email, this from Scott, and he sent us some sayings for the t-shirts, and these are good ones, people. So you're going to have your work cut out for you because we've got some good sayings. I'm going to read, I'm going to read them all. He says, keeping the brown side down. I like that one. Cleared to Geek. That one's a good one, too. Unusual Attitudes Flown Here and Unusual Attitudes Spoken Here. I think those are all really good, Max.
Ooh, so, I like that last one.
I do, too. I think they're all great. So
yeah, they are.
This is not enough, people. I want to see if people can even beat Scott. I want to see if Scott can beat his own, because these are brilliant. Airplane geeks are known for their ability to come up with geeky sayings. So let's have them. Again, send them to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. Heck, if you don't even have any sayings, just send us an email at thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. Let us know what you think of the podcast of Max or myself.
My suggestion is when I went on the back of mine, older than Jetwine. Not by a lot, but enough.
Well, you can send those emails to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. Don't forget to check out the website, airplanegeeks.com, where you can sign up for the newsletter on the right side of the page. Also, give us a call. Leave us a voicemail if you have some impressions of Sun and Fun, if you have some impressions of our podcast, if you have some just something random to say. Give us a call, 812-757-4252. Leave us a message. We'll get you on the podcast. Other than that, don't forget to send us some of the t-shirt ideas. We got some good ones, so we definitely appreciate those. And one more time for my shameless plug, go to quote.kwote.me/beta and pull out some nice excerpts of the podcast to share through Twitter. It even makes a nice, very short, tiny URL-esque link that you can create too. So we'd appreciate that. Thank you again, Rob. And again, you can check out Rob at jetwine.com.
Thank you for being so kind as to have me on. I always love the way you guys. I love your slant on the news.
We love having you.
Well, we definitely have to do something from Oshkosh, though, somehow. Yes. I mean, I don't know how we're going to do it. If you guys are there or you're not, somehow we've got to do something from Oshkosh.
Yes. I'm.
You bet.
Max, again, thank you. That about does it.
Thanks, Corey.
For episode 45. Do you have any words of wisdom, Max?
Only that life is an adventure, and you should treat it that way. Flying an airplane is an example of living the adventure, but if that isn't enough, jumping out of a flying airplane is a more extreme example. Now, if you need even more of a rush, you can consider the 2009 version of the Everest Skydive Adventure. Now, this is where a bunch of crazies are going to jump out of an airplane at 29,500 feet, free fall past Mount Everest, and then land at a 12,000-foot drop zone. So if you need a thrill, there's one for you. Don't try this at home, kids. But do go out and find your own aviation adventure.
Thanks again, gentlemen. That's it for episode 45. Join us next week as we talk airplanes on episode 46 of the Airplane Geeks podcast. We'll see you guys.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.